Wise Words with One Gone Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm in a training right now, so what I'm going to do is pass this over to the host with the most, Mr. Marvell Wilson. Mr. Marvell, there's Mark the Disciple. I see we have Double R in the car and somebody else from the 416. So I'll be going, and I'll talk to you all most soon and later. God bless.
That's me, Mr. Ken Larry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, Tim, you were.
Right.
Yeah, he was a little. Yeah, he was a little fady, but I'll reiterate the introduction. We have Mark the Disciple. We have Double R in the car, and myself. So far, my name is Marvell. I'll be the host for this presentation, and we're pleased once again to share whatever we can to motivate a higher consciousness with the people in this country. And elsewhere, we're across the globe. We're in Africa, we're in Canada, we're in United Kingdom. Pretty darn good, I dare to say. What you say, Mark?
Oh, man, we're hitting them. We're reaching as far out as we can, and we're steady grabbing them. And I say this is a good day to reach some more, so tell a friend. Chime on in.
Right on.
Mr. Marvell, my brother Mark, this is Larry. I'm listening.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Larry, you put it down yesterday, man. That was wonderful, man. I'm still reeling over your report, man, and the excitement I feel in your loins and in your spirit, man, behind the improvements that you're seeing, man. We just want to make sure that we keep the momentum going as best we can, man. So get them around us, and then let's keep on enriching and encouraging, man. Because that's the type of report that keeps us going, right? So wonderful.
Right.
I don't know if people go ahead, Larry.
I said right. He was excited. I told him we talked about it. He didn't really believe me. I had to call my brother Mark to clarify for me. So it made him more excited and more happy that, hey, he's getting recognition how well he started doing. And I think all kids need to get that recognition. And Mark clarified later on by 4:30 or so, and he was just so excited. Until this morning, he's still excited.
Right on. Absolutely. See, that's the type of energy that we want our young people to have, that energy that inspires them to produce and to advance, right? Rather than stay stuck playing games and scrolling on a screen all day looking for something to entertain them. Well, they can entertain themselves by producing, and that's a good thing. And so for those who are not privy to the conversation we had yesterday, we had a report of all good things and things we were grateful for and the accomplishments that have been made and things that keep us inspired to move forward. And one of them was Larry's grandson, whom he has been in our men's group. Larry brought him to our men's group. They have a youth group. He's 15 years old. But Larry brought him to our men's group. And we welcomed him, and he was very, what I would call, despondent. Someone mute, please. He was very despondent, meaning you ask him something, he'll shrug his shoulders. He was indifferent and non-responsive to most of the stuff we posed to him. However, sitting in that atmosphere, something broke through with him to where I remember I asked the question, who is it that he respects enough to listen to? Because that's who we want to talk to, because we want you to get this information where you're most comfortable to get it. And it's pretty clear that he has spoken with someone or opened up to someone that he felt that confidence with. And as a result, everything that we shared probably got expressed through that person, or everything that we shared came back to him. And now this youth was he's gone from F's to B's with one C, and he's on winning game teams because of his effort, his teamsmanship on the sports that he's participating, both basketball and football, and he's so good he got scouts looking at him. Plus, he can cook, and he owe us. He owe me and Joe meals. I think Joe might have paid him. I don't know if Joe on the line. I think Joe might have paid him up front to cook for us because we heard that he's a very good cook and wants to be a chef as well. So I'm looking for my meal, my dinner for real. Larry, I want you to stand in the gap and represent. I'm looking for my meal. I've been looking for that for months. So you make sure you get him on that stove and hook us up, man. But other than that, every report that we got brought a smile to all our faces about a young man who has done a turnaround that is what we aspire to do, is to get them youth to just look at information, look at behaviors, look at what their best interests might be and start moving toward that. And stop allowing themselves to be pulled and tugged by a bunch of marketing, right? So that's what's happening. That's what we reported yesterday about Larry's grandson, and it was a wonderful thing. Oh, also, here's a report. Several weeks ago, we had a young lady call in, and her family is riddled with the usage of, and I'll add something. We did something last night about it too, but her family is riddled with the usage of that fatal drug, fentanyl. So she called in, and we talked with her, and we shared with her what we could over the line, and then we broke bread with her afterwards. Made arrangements to try to get her son in a place where he could look at himself a little differently and have a different environment and maybe be able to make a different decision. And the daughter, talented. Both of them are very talented. Anyway, we didn't hear much for a while, and then we heard that the daughter was in the hospital. And so I got a call the other day from the daughter saying she's at the hospital. And I talked to her yesterday, and she sounded very spirited, very, very, she sounded humble and spirited. But also she said that because she didn't want to go through what they go through with the medications trying to detox, she said she just did it. What they call back in the day, cold turkey. And so when I spoke with her, she sounded like she came through. She may still be in the woods, but she's not so deep in the woods where she can't see her way out. Might still be struggling with the urge. However, she's not in that where it's like it's a do or die. She's not do or die as she may have once been. And for the brother, I didn't hear anything about the brother. So maybe we'll get a report hopefully today, or maybe I could talk to her today and see if she can put us in touch with the brother, or if he'll make an effort to get in touch with one of us. Because, you know, we talked about it last night. We had a fentanyl session last night with a group of our young people, and it was spirited. I mean they were engaged, and they were participating, and they were informed, because we had a young lady come in that has a program. She was on this program a couple weeks ago. Her name is Siobhan, and she came in and did a presentation, gave some details about it and some statistics about the fentanyl. Over 900 people have died of fentanyl How many did you say this year, Mark? This year, she said it's like, what, 90-something people or something like that? But
it's been up in the thousands, though, across the map. And here in California, it's been quite a few. And right now, we're at like 8 people so far. And, I mean, it's just happening daily. People are dying from this mess. So we want everybody to be alert and aware about it.
Yeah, it was, and then we have testimony of people, a lot of the young people, we had about, 15 young people attended. And out of those 15, when asked, do you know anyone who has died from the use of fentanyl? About 6 of them raised their hand. A third of our youth between the ages of 13 to 19, one-third of those young people have had an experience of knowing someone their age or not too much older losing their lives to the use of this drug. It was everybody, all the adults that were in it, because we had about another 10 adults. And I could see when they raised their hand, I could see the look of astonishment on the adult's face. If I had a mirror, I'd have seen it on mine. One-third or better of the youth that we were presenting to had a personal experience with someone dying from the use of fentanyl. So we had a very, very good session yesterday, and I think the youth walked away with at least a better concept of how fatal this drug is. Plus, I think I posed several times to them that this is the type of thinking that we would like for them to have. And I posed to put it to the floor. I said, okay, what if you had a friend and you saw him getting ready to use a drug and it looked like fentanyl? What would you say to him? And they all agreed that the smartest thing to do would be to pull up on them and say, man, is that fentanyl you gave me? Is that fentanyl? You get that? Look like fentanyl. Is that what you're getting ready to do? And everybody concurred that it's nonsense for that person to entertain, and it's nonsense for them not to point it out to them as a friend or as someone who appear or someone who's observing someone who is actually getting ready to risk their life merely for the sake of a feeling. So we drove that message in and clearly too. And then we had a young man who is like an anti-drug. He's our anti-drug youth spokesperson presentation. And I told him afterwards, I said, man, I wanted you to put it all the way down. He did a brief presentation of a couple minutes, but he's got about 5 minutes of statistics and presentation that he does on the internet. He has it like a podcast that he does periodically. And I told him after that, I said, you did a good job, but I want you to do the full-fledged. When we do the next session, do the full-fledged, because I wanted the young people to understand how powerful their influence is with each other. And I think that's the point that we help drive well, too, is that they have probably more influence over the next decision of one of their peers than we do. So I think they got that message. And overall, Mark, I don't know. Tell me what you think about it. Do you think it was successful?
Yeah, I believe it was successful. I would have liked to see more kids out, but like I said, God had who he wanted there for that particular moment. Yes, it was very successful, and it was interesting.
Well, I'm going to tell you, as a presenter, I'm going to tell you something that I've noticed, and it's I think it's one of those little undercurrent concerns with our people that I've observed, right? That is, so see, Tim told us, he said, kids start calling in talking about, you know, that they wasn't, they could they do something else, or postpone or not postpone, but not attend. They called in, and several youth called in saying that they didn't want to attend, right? And they were already committed to attend, but at the last minute, they tipped in the call off, and Tim was telling me about it. And then what it brought to mind clearly to me is what I noticed that our people might struggle with is vital information that once you have it, you have to do something with it. Meaning, I used to do presentations because I was an anti-drug person from way back. I mean, I've been an anti-drug spokesperson from back in the 80s, right? And I'm you know, being fairly well-spoken, when I do a presentation, I've done it in front of audiences of 60, 75 people, that kind of thing, doing the presentation. And after the presentation, I'll get commendation like, oh, man, you did a good job, man. I really learned something. But then I'll stage another one, and it might be 70 people in the one I did, but it'll only be 43 people in the next one. And I was anticipating at least the people that were there to come and let's reinforce what we learned. But what I found out is that the more information that our people get about something like this, the less they seem to want to apply it. So they say, like, okay, well, I got enough, so I'm going to let y'all professionals handle it. Let the police handle it. Let the drug counselors handle it. Let the programs handle it. And I just got enough information to know what they're supposed to do instead of reinforcing what our community can do. So I think it's the same thing with the youth, that they didn't want that information because they knew that they would have to do something with it. And it's a strange phenomenon, but it's something that I've observed that occurs fairly regularly, is that our people don't like to get too much information about certain things, because once they have it, they're responsible to do something with it. I don't know if anybody agrees with that or have had that experience, but that has certainly been mine.
And not only that, a lot of people are reluctant to attend stuff like that because they have that mindset, well, it ain't going to happen to none of mine. Mine know better. But like I tried to tell the kids last night, all of them are susceptible to it, that are out there hanging out with the wrong group, because anything could happen at any time. Like I say, peer pressure is something else. A person could be smoking a cigarette, could be laced with fentanyl. You never know. So, I mean, people really have to be careful about anything, especially during vape pens and stuff like that. You got to understand, when somebody don't like you, they go to any extreme to take you out. And I'm not just talking about their peers. I'm talking about the people that don't like us, period.
Mercy. Wow. I mean, that's an ominous thought to have to entertain, yet it is, it's something that you can't ignore. Man, the human life to certain people is expendable and with very little, seemingly with very little conscience about it, right? Because we pointed out with the young people yesterday, I said, okay, well, what I asked the question, I say, what is it, what do you think a person has to feel or not feel about themselves, that they would take a drug that they know. See, some people take fentanyl, you know, directly. Matter of fact, that's, you know, that's how it got popular, was that offspring from the medicinal distribution of fentanyl, because we had and he's been deceased for almost 8 years now. One of the original members of Club Nouveau, his name was Jay Lincoln, and he was an excellent musician, a composer. As a matter of fact, he lived with us before he died in our house, and Linda, my wife, was his caretaker because he had some very severe liver concerns, and he was in a lot of pain, and he had these fentanyl patches, extremely potent, but he had built up a tolerance for it, and they had graduated to give him, you know, the most that you can get to assuage his pain, right? So they've been using this drug medicinally for a long time, just like morphine. They've been using morphine for a long time, right? And so it became a go-to for people after they shut down oxycodone, all of those. They got the scandal about that. So they shut down the distribution of those things and escalated the availability of this drug. Right? Now we're at a point where people are so thirsty, greedy, and ruthless about selling their stuff that the potency that they're seeking to get people to buy it, they're lacing their drug, their inferior or general or just average drug, with this fentanyl in order to increase their sales, knowing that they might be risking somebody's life. How ruthless can you get? And that's what we want to
ask. May I say something?
Yes, sir.
To where, you know, I deal with my homeless a lot. What really, and I didn't know where
in the world. Who's talking? Who's talking?
This is Rev. Sorry.
All right, Rev, go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. To where, dealing with my homeless people on the street, I ran across a few, because I always ask, why are you on the street, especially when you don't look like you belong on the street? And one guy admitted, you know, I'm just out here with my boy because he'd be selling these fentanyls, he'd be selling little crisps and all this other stuff. I'm like, so you talking about one of your folks got a house? He's like, no, he got a tent, and I'll just move it to certain areas and kind of camp out amongst the homeless people. So I'm like, okay. So a lot of stuff, it comes from people in the home. And you got to think about those days back when crack was flourishing through the neighborhoods. You had little children selling crack. So crack wasn't killing like fentanyl is. It was just making a lot of money. Crack heads was living forever, I feel. Fentanyl's a new drug. And it took me by surprise because I didn't know what they were flipping out on, walking up my limo or walking past it, screaming and everything else, blocking traffic, just going crazy. I'm like, hold up. So some of them I walked up to and I just clapped my hand like that, and it almost sobered them right up, because it's like it's a temporary drug. It does kill. But see, sometimes we got to weigh the scale on life. Death is death. If I get nobody to agree on that factor, God said we live, we laugh, we die, we cry, all that. So when death occurs, we don't have no call. We can try our best to stop things from happening. Many can get saved through it, but many will die from it. But it's a chance you can get some fentanyl, they might be perfectly straight, and then they walk in the middle of traffic or something. Our time to die is the exact second on God's behalf, because I've been doing my best to figure, okay, how can I stop people from dying? I look for the soul in people. Because if people die on fentanyl or crack or heroin or whatever they die on, if their soul is all right, it's just a it's a slim chance they can be rescued after that. Because some people, okay, like now, and heard on the streets too, that they'll prescribe crystal meth to some people. So I'm like, wow, they don't have a pharmaceutical that you can get that from. So they'll prescribe something that you got to find on the streets. And then there's a sack of fentanyl. They are prescribing that to people for a medication, and it makes it to the streets. So once again, when it comes to the devil and everything that he's doing to destroy, we always can't stop it. We can say something, but we just can't always stop it like you want to. Nobody wants to see death in a bad way. Nobody wants to see their kids or loved ones flipping out on anything, rather be alcohol, fentanyl, cocaine, crack, whatever it is that's out there today. It's just finding that root within them to talk to them, as you're trying to do, to see where their hearts and mind is labeled up with it. And getting them away is a blessing. Getting them to be a prosperous person, that most of your NA representatives that run those meetings are ex-drug users. So those that you actually find, oh, their life is changing. Yeah, I hear the best thing to do is to keep them speaking out on it as they're changing, catching some of their peers that they deal with to actually tell them, I went through this, and I know you can beat it too. It's the simplest thing for some people, because like your own children will not listen to you, but the next door neighbor might have their solution. Because I get that all the time. Because, yeah, most of the people on the street, they had a home. You know what I mean? I mean, they all had a home at one point. They were born as babies. And then something in their life clicked. And I had some 17 to 80 years old. Well, actually 80 years old that's living in the streets because of things that happened in their life. So it's been a big toll on me for this 13 years of me doing my ministry, people going that route. This is why I'm starting Homeless for Heaven and God's Children Live Matter, to give them something else to do. Homeless for Heaven is designed to put them to work. They work all day, but then they ain't got nothing to do after the end of the day. And then they go find some type of drugs out there. Same with kids in school. They work all day in school, and then they get out of school and they go try to find something to cope for the rest of their day, dealing with the parents, dealing with their peers that they really don't want to deal with, trying to find that
all
edge
right,
in life.
Rev.
Yes,
so in your experience, Rev, in your experience being an evangelist in the atmosphere where people are homeless or people are living in the underworld, how much of just give me an estimate, how many of your encounters were people involved with the fentanyl use? Just give
a
me an estimate.
A estimate.
A lot. So that means more than the majority?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's become a new feeling. Because, like, a couple actually came up, a man and a woman, and they're like, well, you know, I died 5 times off of this, and I died 7 times off of that. One guy's like, I stopped doing heroin because fentanyl took its place. See? And then the female, she's like, I've been trying to do my crystal meth, and then they'll slide some heroin in it. So it's a lot of things people getting pushed into without even knowing it. See, because crystal meth, if you look at a home, every time you see a homeless person from now on, look at their hands. If their hands are all puffy and swollen up, they're on crystal meth. Because crystal meth, they put so much different stuff in it by the time they make it to the street to give my people some garbage. People that's living in a home, they get the better cut of everything. That's why I say, don't judge my people when you got every other door that does all kind of drugs, drink better alcohol. I get them all in my limo. So I see that the both sides of the track. And it's hard for them on the street to get away from something because some people get injected with things. There was this one lady in particular, dressed well, and purse hanging on her shoulder. This is the one I mentioned briefly, that she jumped in the middle of the street, stopping traffic, then I kept seeing her in the same outfit, purse was gone, then it just, outfit was deteriorating, and just, they got stuck out there. A gentleman that I seen laying on the concrete one night, dead to the world, drunk, right? I stood around this boy for about 3 hours till he fully came through, he got up and walked. We walked all the way around the block, went right past my limo, because I wanted to come back down and sit down. So I put a chair out there, too. He walked right past that, walked right past me again, and kept going up the street, and I left him at that point. But I told him once he came around, because it was like 2, 3 in the morning, I found him again over Padilla Bell's by me called, because I took his phone from him. I took his shoes off his feet, and I took his Gucci wallet. Because I told him when I gave it back, like, my homeless people would have stripped you of this. And some of them might have dejected you with something, and you would have been stuck on the street. He wasn't even from Sacramento. So I had to go chase his boy for around, I need literally 7 or 8 hours. I drove around. I'm like, I know he's still out here. And he called me like 8:39 in the morning from Padilla Bell's mom, and they let him use the phone. But it's a lot of people that get on the street, not even by choice, because of people wanting to find that person that does drugs. If any of y'all have done drugs, right. I ain't never done them. But I know how it is. I smoke weed, and I'll be honest about it. I don't care what you feel. that I know for sure if somebody smokes weed that I know I can get some. And I'll never try to hook nobody on anything. But that's typically how it is. People will try to influence you. Oh, man, you need to try this, man. This will get you so high. It will make you feel good. And then you get stuck on it. Now they got another person that can get more drugs for the team again. So it's a never ending story, as funny as it be, but it's a never ending story. We had Sherm back in the day, my brother that was homeless. I want to get him on the radio eventually. He was homeless for 25 years, lived in the backyard for 8 years. And we didn't know what was wrong with old Philip. He was on that Sherm is what I found out. I got locked up for somebody to recognize my face. I was 30 and I left the Avenues at 18, and I don't think I spoke to that man since I was like 10 or 11. But he recognized my face and said, hey, how's Phil? I'm like, who are you? He named off the whole family. I'm like, so what happened to my brother? He said, well, he took some cigarette and he stuck it in the Sherm and he lit it. They said you're supposed to let it dry, then you smoke it. My brother Philip always tried to act like he cool, which he's just a normal guy. And he smoked it, lit his head up. He was painting his car, stuck in the front of the house for a year. It went from one color to another color that looked like the Partridge Bus tour car. I mean, the Partridge family. The Partridge family painted the bus.
So, yes, sir.
He was lured into things. And that's how he looked at his life. He was lured into things by his so-called friends. Everybody want to get high.
Right.
Everybody want to get drunk. You pass it around. So it's getting between that. And that's why I mentioned all this, because I wanted to say it before, to where the scripture, it always hits me because that's one of my best. To be friends, you must first be friendly. I'm always friendly in the sense of I don't care if your back hurt, I'll rub it. If you need me to cut your grass, like I told Tim the other day, he wanted to pay me, but at the end of it, like, man, if you just come get me, I'll cut your grass because you can't do it. So I'm always in that friendly mode first because I don't want to have it feel like somebody's doing so, so much for me and I've done nothing for you.
But to be these people's friends,
it is to show them the love and affection and say that you're better than this. You don't have to do this. And we can walk and be stronger than this and introduce them to people that's like-minded like you might be, to surround them with, like you said, the better culture of people. But it's still the form
I'll
of
say,
where the devil and God
say,
is.
Amen.
Hey, double R in the cork. Double R in the cork.
Hey,
double R.
Roll in, baby.
Hey, man, I wanted to talk about them smiles that we had yesterday, man. And I'm going to tell you, hey, bro, I had to put that Tupac on, man. Black people, black man. If you black, smile for me now, because with the story you gave me about Taylor, man, that was, man. Hey, check this out. This fentanyl, look, it's 100 times more potent than morphine and 50 times more potent than heroin. So for her to be going through this, I can understand because it had a hold on her. But for her being in that hospital, I was glad that she was able to clear herself from that. And I was glad that they didn't substitute and put nothing in her vein. You know what I'm saying? Because you got to understand this. They be trying to take that and give you something else so you can come back. These are number one dope dealers in the United States, in the world, is our medical people. You know what I'm saying? So for her to snatch everything away, you know what I'm saying, that was more powerful. So you prayer warriors on that, man, keep praying for Sister Taylor, man, and Mama Chocolate, man, and her family, and her son, too. And I hope we can get an update from Brother Manny, man, to make sure that how we had our resolution as far as separating them, because he's the youngest and she's the oldest. But I just continuously pray that she can get clean first. I yield back.
I made sure I did I text you, Double R, or did I call you?
Oh, no, you gave me a nice text. No, you gave me a nice voicemail, man. I think I gave you a thumbs up on the text to you. But, yeah, man, that was
good.
Yeah, I was in the RV. I was moving and everything. I couldn't get to the phone yet.
Right, okay. Yeah.
I'm going to give a little insight. I want to give a little insight on how these drugs make it to the street. When I was in the military, when you're in the military, you meet guys from all walks of life. And I was in the reserves. And some of these guys, their wives were nurses. Some were doctors. And they would take these pills. Because, see, you have to understand, every drug before it make it to the streets, they run tests on people. They do these trial tests where people could make money if they apply and go to these and if they want to take these tests. So, and they pay them for these tests. They just guinea pigs. And so when doing so, some of them get placebos, some of them get the real thing. But in doing so, they find out what does what to them, how it makes them feel. And I had a guy in my unit, and he would come bring pills on every time we come out. He's got a new and different pill. And a lot of guys would take these pills. And I'm going to tell you how crazy it is. We had one guy just came into the unit. We were up here in Livermore, up in Camp Pendleton. And we're sitting out there, and these guys bought the pills out. And this one guy said, man, give me one. I told him, I said, man, you don't want to take that. Oh, man, I could take anything. This little white boy took that pill and passed out. We took care of him then, but I've never seen him since. And that's why I was trying to tell these kids last night, some things you could hit twice, some you might hit four or five times, but some of it just one time. And another thing about this drug, fentanyl, this stuff is killing people just like anthrax. Just a touch. Just inhale it. And see, like you was trying to explain to the kids last night, it could be in the air. And it very well can be airborne because it's a powder. You can make it into a powder. And powders can blow with the wind. So you have to be very careful. And I'm going to digress on that.
You guys got a meeting or something?
It was 10 o'clock.
Meeting or appointment?
Sound like we got Joe on.
That's cool.
Wait.
Joe, is that you?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, he was white.
The reason I brought up the area of economics is because last night, money is the key to any drug, because if you don't have it, obviously we know that you obviously can't buy it. And that was the reason why I approached the subject of fentanyl, not as the drug or the dangers of it, but the money. Where's the money coming from? Because we know that when you pay top dollar, you get clean drugs or somewhat clean drugs. The drugs that are out there on the streets, including the fentanyl, have been cut so many times, as you guys have been saying, and we have found out it's cut with all kinds of stuff. But that's because the money, the buyer has minimal amount of money. So that's the reason why I brought up economics. I'd like to be able to continue with economics, because economics and drugs they go hand in hand with each other. I'm glad to be with you guys this morning. I have a 10 o'clock appointment. So, gentlemen, I'll talk with you guys later, and thank you.
Right on.
Go.
Yeah, so go ahead, Mark. Is that you, Mark? All right, so our session last night talked about fentanyl, particularly, and the way that it's being distributed makes it apparel for you to use almost any drug now. It makes it apparel for you, okay, so a sort of alcohol where you can buy from you know, any store for the most part, it's sealed and all of that. Then we talked about the things that you, one of the kids said this. They said, well, marijuana, if you, you know, if you get it from the dispensary, then you might be safe from it being infused with anything other than the THC value and marijuana itself, and maybe that'll safeguard you from being exposed to that. So then the question was, how many of y'all can go to the dispensary? And none of them can go. And I would dare to say that at least a third of them have smoked or may be smoking marijuana, maybe as we speak, right? So that argument was moot. Young people wanted, you know, they if they smoke the marijuana, then they want to, you know, like justify their behavior, and you can't do it. Three other youth that talked about knowing someone who died from marijuana, I mean died from fentanyl, said that they smoked marijuana with fentanyl in it. Remember that, Mark? That's what they said. When they gave their report about, you know, when you ask them and say, okay, well, you knew somebody died, and then we said, well, what happened? And they said, well, they smoked some weed, and it had fentanyl in it. So it's really an anti-marijuana campaign for young people, which I'm for. I'm for anti-marijuana, especially for young people. I'm an anti-marijuana because, you know, marijuana is a drug. And the THC value that they're grooming this drug in nowadays, if somebody talked about it yesterday, it's like 500% greater than the marijuana that was grown naturally. Because the marijuana that they're grown naturally, so right now, I don't consider natural. I consider it supernatural. Ariane Hoskam made that 80s in Copenhagen, where they couldn't find, Denmark is known for being a causeway for all kinds of drugs in Europe, right? So Denmark, they had all kinds of drugs, but they couldn't grow weed. And they loved the weed because the weed was mellow and whatever. It didn't have you stuck like some of the other drugs. So they couldn't grow them. So this guy named Ariane Hoskam started experimenting in his basement with growing weed using lights and special soils and all of that stuff. And he started it in the 80s. And he was on High Time magazine, Man of the Year and all that stuff. He made millions of dollars not selling the weed itself because that's illegal. He was selling the seeds and called them souvenirs. And he became a millionaire selling seeds, saying they were souvenirs, right? And it got to the United States. And then, you know, when it gets here, if it got anything to do with money, oh, it's going to get blown all the way up to the hilt. It's going to get blown all the way up to the highest level because greedy people in this country are in abundance. Greed is a regular practice here. So anything that's going to make some money, believe me, somebody going to blow it up to the highest degree, and it doesn't care who it steps on the way. So, again, we're stuck right here with this drug usage thing, and we're stuck with our young people justifying using the drug, even though they might be risking their life when they do it. I did a little research, and they had a penny, and they showed how much of that drug next to a penny could kill you. And it's about the size of the head of the Lincoln. It was broke up, but if you put it together, it would be about the size of Lincoln's head on a penny. If that's enough, that was enough fentanyl to take a life. And that's where we are now. You know, as a general society, and it's very disturbing. Because, you know, matter of fact, I was kind of shocked to hear. I didn't know, Rev, you just openly, blatantly said you smoke weed and you don't care what nobody say. I'm saying, oh, okay, well, I ain't going to say nothing, but what I'm just going to say what you said. You smoke weed and you don't care what nobody say. And marijuana is a drug.
Well, I know, but it's prescribed to me to smoke. I can either take something for my heart condition, my high blood pressure, things of that nature, and marijuana calms me down because I won't buy nothing that I know for sure it ain't got no fentanyl on it. But when it comes to me relaxing and just coming back to my normal feeling instead of stressing out, because y'all know I talk a lot. I got a lot of things going through my mind. My mama died by my age at 58 because she couldn't handle the stress and the worries of her life. She had a stroke, heart attack, and died. So I don't feel I'll just die from that, but I don't want to be in a stroke situation either because I got too many things to do to be able to try to lip around and do whatever and not talk right and sing right and everything else. So I do it as a medication. That's why I say I don't care what nobody says because there's always going to be opinion and judgment whatever man decides to do. Some of the people on here desire to have a shot of alcohol to calm their nerve down behind their evening. So I don't care what they do. So it's in that simple area. I don't worry about the judgments of people because that's what the most part I get in life. People want to judge me for something, and I don't care.
On the floor?
So I'm glad you brought that back up for
under
me.
Yeah.
I yield.
Well, see, medicinal use, it has been bridged that marijuana has medicinal value, right? And that's what introduced a whole bunch of leverage to get it from being medicinal to being recreational.
Yeah,
I was with the International Faith-Based Coalition for years, and then let me finish. And in three years, we went down to twice. We went to the Capitol to oppose the legalization of marijuana, and we won two times.
Okay. Now, did you know, Mr. Marvell?
But you keep interrupting, Rev. We're not going to do this, okay?
I said sorry.
Right.
Go ahead.
All right, but I don't interrupt you. Let's keep it understood. I don't interrupt you. So what I'm saying to you is that medicinal use has cleared the way for recreational use. And now it's either or. So if I got a back pain, I can justify smoking weed because it assuages my pain, right? I knew a lady that had full-blown AIDS, and she used the marijuana. She grew it in her home. I used to go to her home, and she had a room where she had all the sophisticated equipment to grow the marijuana that she wanted to use to assuage her pain and help her appetite because she also had a box in her closet full of the medication.
Excuse me, Marvell. Somebody mute their mic, please. Somebody mute their mic, please. Okay,
hey,
Marvell.
Joe,
I think
is that
might
you?
Be Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Joe, mute your mic.
No, it is not. No, it is not.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Oh, sorry, Joe.
Oh.
Apologize.
That's all right.
Sorry, Joe.
No,
hey.
It is not. No noise.
Ain't Joe this time. Well, somebody
yeah,
wrong
okay.
with this stuff. Stop.
Yeah, it's kind of rough.
That's better.
So this young lady had full-blown AIDS, and she lived a healthy life because the medicinal value of the marijuana was helping her assuage her pain and helping her increase her appetite because people with the full-blown AIDS, they have this thing counter to having a good appetite, and it depletes their mineral and their vitamin source in their body, right? But she was doing such a good job of it that she got a contract with a distributor, and she sold her weed to these distributors because they're so pure, because the purity of the weed was necessary for her, because if any bacteria got in the weed that she was cultivating, it could kill her. So we're not going to deny that it has medicinal values in certain circumstances. And I'm not pointing the finger at anybody who uses it, but I am saying that a lot of times people say that it's assuaging the pain that maybe something else could have handled, but, you know, you're assuaging the pain, but you're also high, too. So, you know, like, could you find something else that don't get you high? Possibility, likelihood, yeah. But marijuana use has become so commonplace now that now we got our kids using it, buying it from people on the street, and it could be laced with fentanyl. That's where we are right now.
And, you know, I want to add something to that. See, what you buy from that medicinal shop, you don't know what's in it. They're putting stuff on, they're putting adding chemicals to this weed. I've been smoking weed for so long, man, and I know damn well when there's something different to it. And I stopped when they came out with their skunk. Ain't no way where I'm going to put some smell like that in my mouth. I don't even want to smell it. But the thing about it is that they say it was chemicals, but that smelled too good, too much like a skunk. It had to be a number of some skunk piss on that plant or something. But my thing is, this medicinal stuff, you have to be careful because they don't like you. That's the reason why they wanted to do the weed like they're doing it now so they can tax it. They're making all kind of money off that weed. So the thing about it is, you can grow your own. If you grow your own, you know what you're getting. Like man wants that ultimate high. See, he just can't settle for a little nice, relaxing high. He wants that. He's smoking this weed like it's crack. That stuff can't be that good. If you roll a blunt, a big old blunt, and you hit that, you smoke all of that, then you got to roll another big old blunt. You smoking it like crack. I remember back in the day, I'd get a joint of weed and smoke it. Man, I'm good. I don't need no more for about 2 or 3 hours or four. You know, so make it make sense to me. Make it make sense.
Yeah.
Because it really don't. All you got to do, you change your diet. You change the way you eat. Change your sleeping habits. Change your thinking. You won't need no weed. You won't need nothing because God gave you everything to be all right.
Amen.
You think on
Amen.
Him for everything
Amen.
You need. You got it.
Okay, absolutely. Now, does anybody on here take a prescribed medication? Because I deny taking high cholesterol, my diabetes, and I'm HIV positive. Let that spread across the world, too. Feel me? Because I don't care what people think, say, or judge. Because people are going to do what they do, and I only do things. I don't get high on marijuana. It's just something to calm me down, make me relax, make me hungry, because I don't hardly eat either. So all these type of things go through Rev that people don't know because they don't. Once again, my thing I mentioned in the beginning, to be friends, you must first be friendly. I get a message from Double R at 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, a scripture. You know what I'm talking about? He'll call me on the phone sometime. You know what I'm talking about? That creates the friendship. But if I can't talk to somebody on a friendship level, I never even made it past your doorstep. And that's how I am with life. So when it comes to the marijuana thing, your Bishop Ron Allen that you used to work under, which is just not the best person in my life, Mr. Marvell, he went to Washington to help marijuana get legalized. Rather you knew that part about that man. He threw it in my face because he wanted me to go out and help protest against marijuana. He knew I smoked marijuana, but you want me to protest, though? Please, knock it off. You're just trying to get more attention, trying to get more money out of this government. So I put things like that in the front of men's face because of the simple fact we go through whatever in life. We got to look, we came from slavery to here. We've had all kind of protests and everything all the way up to here, and I hear another protest. I wasn't involved in them years ago, and I'm trying my best to stay on deck with what we're doing right now. But I don't see a lot being done. I just hear a lot. I don't see, because my God's Children, Lives Matter, and Homeless for Heaven is for us to get out there and march, go up in front of that Capitol. I'll have my homeless people. I was trying to line that up anyway at Cesar Chavez Park. I threw a couple of shows. I brought them some wine out there to drink. I like leave all your other drugs and stuff at home. I brought some marijuana that I know was safe and cool to smoke, and they smoked that. Leave all your other drugs and stuff at home. And I had 50 to 100 of my homeless people while I'm out there with my big old bulk box and having a good long day, about 5 or 6 hours I hung out there with my folks. And I was planning on bringing it all together more and marching, just walking right over to City Hall and camping on their grass, just camping out there right in front of the Capitol, because rights is rights. We got so many black people, and this is what we're trying to help the black people, but there's so many on the streets. That's why I jump over everything y'all say, because all we're talking about is people that's in above level. I deal with my people that's on the streets because I am a street person. I'm in the streets. I'm pretty much homeless. I'm trying to get, praying next week, I'll get my limo back up and rolling, and I'll be back in the streets living, because I got to be out there. I need to be out there. I'm wanted out there. So everybody else, y'all go home. Y'all be cool. Y'all be safe. Y'all have a good life and night. But while Rev is out there 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning driving around making sure that my people is cool, they kicked all my homeless people out of downtown. Can we keep that on the agenda sometime? Where are my homeless people at? You know what I mean? They ain't got no shelter. They don't have enough of this or that. They got no campsite areas. It's just the city's disguise and hide my people. Are
hey, Rev, can you ask me one question?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell me the difference between the homeless and the hopeless?
Yes, I can. Homeless is the people that's just stuck without a home right now. The hopeless ones is the one that been out there for 30, 40 years, and they turned hopeless. But at the same token, when I pull them up, they know the word of God. So I give them back their hopelessness. See, because I can find homeless people that recite every word out of that Bible, but they keep on going. They dearly enduring somebody to help them get out of the situation. My Homeless for Heaven is designed to get tools and trucks. I didn't tell too many people, but tools and trucks will get most of my homeless people, and that's the one that got a mind on their shoulder still. A little bit of drug and alcohol, I can drug everybody in City Hall. I can drug everybody in the government and find out how many people are up there also doing cocaine and heroin and fentanyl and everything else. So we judge because we look at it as society does. Oh, they're so disgusting, they're nasty. My homeless people can't afford too much drugs. And what they get are from those tents to where they come out of the houses, where everybody living comfortably, got a good job, and they feeding them garbage so they can stay homeless. See, people are living at the top. Yes, sir.
Yeah. See, a lot of things that you propose about what others are, the motives are, is a little bit heavy-handed, because you really can only speculate why somebody's doing what they're doing, and if you could keep it where it appears as though, instead of definitely is, then, you know, maybe you'll retain a little bit more of an audience to what you're sharing, but it sounds like you're kicking a lot of dirt on a lot of folks. And, because you're saying it. Listen. You're going to have to listen, brother. You're going to have to learn how to listen. So
well, you have to interrupt me.
Like,
go ahead, though.
Okay, well, I did, and I'm the host of this.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. I know, and that's
right,
the difference.
I'm the host
ahead,
of this. No, we're not gonna bicker. Hey Tim, if he's available. Okay, so you know, some of the things that you say about others, you know, it sounds like you're denouncing and kicking dirt on people to make your point. And I would advise and urge you not to include others in your point. Make your point with the merits of your point and your experience, and not say somebody did this, so therefore I did that, or somebody's doing this and you don't know about it. No, I don't know about it, you know, and I don't want to know about it, because if they're not here to defend themselves, then I think you should keep it to yourself. So let's focus
Amen.
On that. Yeah, let's focus
Amen.
On that.
The
now
things,
let's go on.
The things
let's
that
go
I know
further.
I went through.
Okay, but let's go on further. Let's go on further, because still we are still at this crux about how we carry a message about this fentanyl to our young people so that they won't get entrapped and stay like sleep on the prospect. Because, see, we got these kids doing these Percocets, right? They're
mm-hmm.
shooting these Percocets, right? And so
uh-huh.
we had a kid last night said that he knows for a fact that the pill that they use, the blue pill they call it, the Percocet, is being cut in thirds and then enhanced by fentanyl to make one pill look like three pills, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're selling that. So let's just let's acknowledge and let's just attempt to focus on what it is that's driving this whole thing, man. It's greed. Greed is driving it, and greed is an insidious kind of illness, and it's like a disease. Greed, man, is making people do stuff with no regard for what they're doing to other people, right? That's where we are, and that's
years.
The challenge that is before us. So
but
when we talk about drug
years.
Usage, when we talk about drug usage, which I don't want to feel like casual, like one drug. All I'm saying is if you're using a drug of any kind, keep it to yourself.
We got some background.
Hey,
yeah,
so you're listening to the Wise Words of One Gun Show. I'm still in training, man, but we got to get this commercial in, and I appreciate y'all listening worldwide.
Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents You Healing Circle. Every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m.
You Healing Together.
2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. Inside of Room 67. Our Youth Healing Circle is a forum where we dive into discussions about drugs, bullying, school, and life skills. We provide a safe space and inform our youth
that sometimes it is okay to not be okay.
During our Youth Healing Circle, our youth may hear from other youth as well as experienced adults how to problem solve and navigate unforeseen complexities that we all run into in life. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. That's Room 67, every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. For more information, text or call 916-889-0105. Let's heal together. Peace and blessings, King. Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents
the Men's Healing Circle.
Brothers healing together.
Brothers healing together.
Join us every Wednesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, inside the Obama Room. The Men's Healing Circle is a place where men uplift, encourage, and inspire each other to be better through personal testimony, dialogue, self-reflection, self-improvement, and positive affirmation. Again, that's 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, in the Obama Room. Come out and pledge to greatness with your fellow brother.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. What's up with it? Attention sack artists. You trying to get your music played? R&B, jazz, hip-hop, and comedy. Spoken word as well. Send your MP3 tracks to DJ1Gone at yahoo.com. That's DJONEGONE at yahoo.com. Make sure you give a call to 347-205-9722 or log on to blogtalkradio.com.
Thank y'all for listening, man, to the Wise Words of One Gone Show. I'm going to turn it back over to our host with the most, Mr. Marvin. Marvell Wilson.
It's a category in rhythm and beat game that, again, I just learned in a camp. So imagine everybody's in a circle clapping. You have to.
Right on. Am I here? Am I back on?
Yep. You back on. Go ahead, Marvell.
Okay, so I'm glad we had that break so I could sit in back and reflect, because it is not that I'm casting any aspersions or being judgmental about anyone's choice. It's just that there's certain things that when we're on the air, there's certain things that I think is fair for us to not advocate for, because now when you say something, you could take 20 seconds to say it, but it'll take you another 20 minutes to explain or justify it. And that's what I don't want our young people, because if we got young people listening, or we got people who may be on the fence about certain things, I don't want them to walk away thinking that a bunch of learned people versus experienced people that we have on these panels, we have people who are gifted, versed, anointed, experienced. And if we give an advocation to some some kind of usage of a drug or something like that, then we might be setting somebody off on a path that they don't deserve to be on because we sanction it. I don't want to sanction anything that someone might do, pick up, and have an adverse response to it because, as Mark said, some people can do it 3-4 times. Some people can only do it once. And I don't even want to advocate for someone experimenting one time on what we're experiencing in our atmosphere today. Anything could be in anything that you think is something in the first place. Anything could be in it because greed is the undercurrent for everything that people are selling people for, to, and for their money. They don't care. So that's the point that we're always attempting to drive when we talk about this drug usage syndrome, is that the people that are selling it to you don't give a fuck about you. Get with that.
I agree, bro. Hey, the thing is, I want to tell these youngsters to don't try nothing. Don't even take a sip of wine. I wish I could rewind back all the way when I was young. Well, I was an altar boy in the Catholic school, you know what I'm saying? An altar boy, we used to serve the wine up to the congregation, whatever, and we used to be in the back drinking Ernest and Julio Gallo. I wish I never did that because that led me to weed and everything else. You feel me? So even if you try a little bit, alter your brain. It is a whole, it's an evil spirit that comes into your body. You start out with weed and people graduate. I think 99% of the people, when they don't need heavy drugs, they start out with weed or maybe a little wine or maybe a beer. You know what I'm saying? Then it go on and on and on. So we have to tell these kids to stay sober-minded, leave all that alone, because the bottom line, like y'all say, is the bag. They using us as guinea pigs at the same time. They're getting rich over us trying to experiment with things altering our brain. I yield black, double off. Now, move my mic.
Now, who was this message? Who was that message?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt, man, because, listen, how do you know what? Here's where we are. There's a drug, a tranquilizer, an animal tranquilizer. They call it Trank. It's called, the name, technical name is xylazine. And they're mixing that with fentanyl. And if you ever seen someone tranked up, you will see somebody in a nod that they don't stand back up from. They've bent over like a pretzel. And it's hideous, man. So that's where... See, it doesn't get any better. It just worsens the condition when we don't talk about it. And when we don't put it out in the atmosphere of that it's not socially acceptable. Because now drug usage has become virtually socially acceptable. Everybody, see, when people ask me, do I use a drug? And I tell them, no, and I don't smoke cigarettes. You know, I'm not profane in my delivery. They think something wrong with me. Like, dude, you don't drink or nothing? No, I don't do that anymore. I don't do it anymore.
There you go.
But now it's people looking at me like it's something foreign about me because I don't use anything. I don't even take medication. I don't take pain stuff. I don't take Advil. I find local remedies because I don't want anything in my body that could trigger any thought or anything in my system that triggers me to think that I could start using it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it because I started at 12 years old drinking and I didn't get clean until the year 2000. In and out, and up and down. Listen. I was up and down in my life on the street, in and out, my life in and out the penitentiary. All those years, back and forth, up and down, in and out. And I'm so grateful to be able to report that I still have faculty after all the things I did to commit suicide. And that's what I'm urging our young people and people of our ilk, especially our black folks, is to consider not risking suicide with a drug will be very prompt in killing you if you take too much of it. Fentanyl. Then the xylazine. Y'all look it up. They call it trank. Look it up. When you get a chance, look up trank, and they'll show you pictures of people. If they started on the old coast there, with Philadelphia area all up, and I think it's like down in I would dare to say Baltimore, those areas, and now it's worked its way. It's in San Francisco, and it's getting popular. People don't mind risking their lives for a feeling. How twisted is that? We did it when we were young, but we didn't see people just dying around us. And when we did, I tell you what, this is how the drug syndrome goes. When I was young, when somebody had the OD dope, somebody OD'd on it, everybody ran to the dope man that had the OD dope, lying to themselves, talking about, I won't put that much water on it. I won't put that much. I'm going to put more water on mine, right? I ain't going to do like they did, but give me that. I'll put some more water on it, and maybe I'll cut it myself, but I got to have some of that OD dope, right? So that's how twisted the drug system is, man. So we have to, got to deter our young people from even contemplating getting to that, where they just don't care about their life. They don't care about how the impact they have on the people that care about them. They don't care about nothing but this feeling. And that's all we're talking about. We're talking about people are getting rich off of our want to feel something for a temporary period of time. And that's twisted. And we got it untwisted, man. We got to untwist it. That's our job.
Yeah, they're trying to escape reality. That's what it is. It's a numb. They try and numb themselves from reality, but when the drug is over, you right back at it. So that's what it is.
Thank
it's an evil spirit that comes in you, and it makes your mind crazy. Man, I commend you, Russell Luke. You've been through all that. You've been sober-minded, man. That's great. I just stopped drinking alcohol the 1st of January, man, since I was an altar boy, 6 years old, brother. You feel me? So I'm trying to catch up to you. I yield black. I mute my mic. Double R. Gone.
Well, I'm going to tell you
what.
Hey, man,
congratulations.
Hey, check this out, man. Yeah, congratulations, Double R. Check this out, man. Tell you how scheming, how cunning the enemy is. And when I say enemy, I'm talking about that devil, and I'm talking about the oppressors. They're so smart and slick with it that all they want to do is get rid of us. But they say, hey, wait a minute. We can get rid of them and make some money while we do it. Yeah, we're selling this shit to make them kill themselves. Now, is that not smart or what? Is that not smart? Tell me. That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
It's diabolical.
Yep.
But tell me, isn't that something that they've been doing for years? I've never done nothing other than marijuana. I don't drink, never. I might have drank maybe a pint of alcohol in my entire life.
Right.
So I don't agree with a lot of things. And like I said, I drive a limousine. I got a
Rev, let me explain. This is what we're saying. We don't encourage marijuana usage because it's a gateway drug. Because once a person smokes some marijuana, they're so relaxed, they are susceptible to anything, whatever a person pushes their way. And not only that, I remember back in the days, a whole lot of people that got hooked on heroin didn't pick up the needle they sell. People would walk through a party and do what they call skin popping. Just poke you one time with it.
Yep.
Now you need it. See,
so that's
what I'm saying. So if we promote it, then kids will be able, they say it's all right to smoke weed. I'm not giving nobody that privilege.
No,
so
I don't want to influence it that everybody needs to go to try it, none of that area. But
no. But I'm saying we don't want to give that idea that it's okay to do it. Because when we say I do this to relax me, well, they're gonna say, well, if Rev's doing it to relax him, I could do it to relax me. Because Rev is a child of God, so it must be all right. We don't want to give that approval. That's all we're saying.
Go hey, ahead. Rev, I think you got some feedback. You got some feedback in the back, dog.
Yeah. Is it me? Probably.
Yeah, right on. And so you know, just we can see the graduation. We can see that for the sake of and the love of money, there are no limits to what people will do to each other. And we're attempting to protect our people and our children from ruthless, diabolical, like you said, Mark. You say smart, yeah, extremely smart and diabolical, that they come up with stuff for the sake of control and money that I don't think we would even think of, right? So we have to be guarded against that onslaught to the best of our ability, to the best of our knowledge. That's why we had that presentation last night. And we're going to have more. We're going to have more presentations. See, we're going to get to the, I'm hoping in the near future we'll get to that marijuana issue and break it down, right? Because I started drinking when I was 12. Then I was sitting in front of my house and somebody introduced me to the marijuana sitting in the car in front of my house, and I thought that the car went around the block and parked again two or three times. I felt like the car went around the block, and I kept feeling it slow down and stop, right? And I'm thinking, damn, did we move? Then and then it again, right? So got introduced to that. The next thing you know, I was sniffing glue. Sniffing glue. That was popular. Then I was drinking cough syrup. That was popular. Then I started shooting heroin. That was in the 60s when it was inserted into our communities to quell the movement that was coming up because black power, black family, black brotherhood, black sisterhood, all that stuff was starting to rise. And the way to deal with that through a diabolical means was to put everybody to sleep. And they put heroin in the community, and it would take, they used to have what they call a McDonald's spoon. A McDonald's spoon. It was a white, long spoon with a little bitty little cup area. And a McDonald's spoon cost you $5 and it'll keep you high all day because the motive was to quell the movement and to put us to sleep. So we have, coming from these understandings, we got to recognize when something is inserted into our culture or into our group, it's to control. And we don't want to be controlled no more. At least we don't. We see beyond being controlled. We see that we can control ourselves. We got, last night I had a shirt on that said, we are our own medicine. And that's what we're saying when reparations occur. We're not talking about the money or the what you're going to do. Give us what we deserve is going to repair us. Give us what we earned, and we'll repair ourselves.
Yeah, Pot.
I want to say something. See, this is what everybody got to understand, that they already understand. See, the system, under the oppressor knows what's in our DNA. There's power in our DNA. If you're sober and you meditate, like you meditate on that word, but just get out there in God's country near the water, near some trees, hug a tree, touch some trees, rub the grass, roll in it, but meditate in it. That power that's in you will come forth. It will awaken. It will give you energy. It will wipe all your pains away, all your tears away. Like Dr. Sabin said, you put the right stuff in your body. You got to put the stuff in your body that grew from where your origins come from. That's where the healing process takes place. See, all this man could give you is something to cover the pain up. It don't take the pain away. It just numbs your mind where you can't feel the pain. So you psyched out. That's why they call them psych drugs. So you psyched out. Now you out here trying to psych other people out. Man, like I say, God gave us everything we need. And he did not give us a match to smoke a damn thing. He didn't give us a needle to shoot a damn thing. And he didn't give us a cup to drink a damn thing. We get on our knees, drink out the river where the water flows. It cleanses itself. You find a stream coming out the mountain. That water cleanses, purifies itself. See, God created us, these bodies, to take care of itself. So if you got something going on in your body that's very disturbing or something like that, painful or whatever, fast. That's where the fasting come in at. Your body will eradicate stuff and begin to heal itself. Because it'll eat up whatever bad in there. And I strongly believe that. So I'm going to digress on that because I'm about ready to start preaching.
Your own, brother.
We are our own medicine. We are our own medicine. We are our own medicine, the physician that can heal thyself with the methods that you're talking about, Mark, the nature, the stop and give credence to, the Spirit of God acknowledging it deliberately, and then allowing that Spirit to permeate your next move and to permeate your next decision, right? And be that guiding force, right? It's just such a challenge with so many distractions, right? And that's what we're doing when we talk with the youth, not only about drug usage, but we talk to them about the new drug, which is technology. It's a new drug, right? Preoccupation with the phone. I mean, we're sitting there yesterday, and we got kids. I ain't gonna call them kids. Got young people engaged, engrossed in what we're saying. But then we got some that's sitting there on their phone, right in our face. And I said, man, why are you doing that? Oh, I was just, I said, well, were you paying attention? Yeah, kind of. I said, but look, this is not a format for you to be kind of paying attention. Either you are or you're not. So if you don't want to be in here, get out, go outside. Ask go to the bathroom or do what you got to do. But don't be sitting there. See, it's the same principle that we're talking about now. When we start allowing certain people to have the privilege of being seen or heard doing certain things, then that gives permission for the rest of them. So why wouldn't all the rest of them see you pulling out your phone and nobody said nothing to you? So I'm going to pull out my phone. Why wouldn't I? I don't know. I'll try to listen, but I'm more engrossed with my game, or I'm more engrossed with what happened on TikTok. So that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, the new drug that we continue with is not only the old drug, but the technology drug that they're stuck on, right? So we have a big job, but we have a willingness to assume the role necessary and stand in the gap to get these youth to look at their behavior a little closer. Because we're in a dire situation as black folk. You know, I don't want to get all detailed about it, but can't you, I'm going to ask every person, don't you feel a little something is out of order?
My
when they're sending money over to another. Go ahead.
See. Here's the thing, and this technology, it's not good to have these phones up to your ear. You're taking in radiation. Radiation causes a lot of different things to go on with our bodies because, see, we are electrical beings. See, they know these things. So it's not even good to carry it around in your pocket. So I've been reading up on a lot of stuff. Because if you notice, a lot of times we have some major pain, and that's a new pain. Well, you got a new thing on you. See, so that's why I say technology is a mess. We got to be careful with what we're bringing into our house and how we're using these products and stuff. Because, like I say, the man, that's Simon Bar-Sinister up there. I rule the world. better be careful. I ain't lying. He ain't joking. And there was something else I was going to say. I'm going to let you go on, Marvell. I might remember it. I digress.
Right on. Yeah, see, you know, that's why people overhear my conversations all the time, because I speakerphone most of my conversations, because I don't put that thing to my ear. You know, it's just something, I don't know if it's something I heard or just something I felt, but I just don't, it seems out of order for me to be walking around with a phone in my hand all the time. So I got a bag that I put my phone in, and I done walked in places, and dudes be talking about, yeah, man, dude got him a purse. Okay, well, call it what you want to, dude, you know, but I'm not going to be walking around with a phone in my hand or bulging out my pocket, because I like to be neat. I don't want no phone bulging out my pocket. I don't even carry a wallet in my pocket, because I don't want the bulges and stuff. It's just goofy. I wonder why they took away. Remember they used to have the cases that go on your hip? They don't even sell them no more, because they want you to walk around with the phone so you can drop it. Crack the screen. If you ain't got insurance, oh, that'll be $150. If you got insurance, you're paying $30 a month to protect your, you know, to prepare the phone for free. And they're selling you an $800 to $1,200 phone that's got a screen that crack. If I'm paying that kind of money for a phone, I should be able to throw it down. And it shouldn't break. But you drop a phone in the face now, it's cracked. You can't even use it. The game is just so cold. But like I say, man, that greed thing, that's something I think is important for us to keep in the forefront of our minds and be wary of anything that's proposed that's supposed to be helping you, but it's really designed for somebody to help themselves. And you're not even important. All they want to do is market something to you so that they can fatten their coffers, not really caring about the impact that it has on you. Because I say this all the time. I've noticed that people who sell these high-priced tennis shoes, Nike and all of that, their kids don't wear them. Their kids have fitted shoes, right? Fitted to the contour to their feet. They only wear, they have them, their shoes made so they fit their feet so that their feet will grow properly, right? So they're making all this money off of a product that they don't use themselves. And it's the same thing with the dope. So that's our job, is to keep pulling the covers off of all of these schemes to keep us asleep, to keep us diverted, and to keep us from thinking clearly. That's our job, and we're doing it, gentlemen. We're doing it. Congratulations, and thank you all very much for your participation. Because the people listening to this, they're doing like, remember Arsenio Hall show? He say the things that make you go, So that's what we're doing. We're presenting things that make you go, I hadn't thought about it like that.
Well, I did.
That's right. That's right. That's what we're doing, y'all. So, you know, we have our little exchanges and controversies, ladies and gentlemen. But believe me, we're still gonna be a unit when it's over with. If we got some little rough edges, we're gonna smooth them out, and we're gonna
That's
do it.
It.
We had that demonstration to let it be known clearly about 6 weeks ago. 6 weeks ago, there was an exchange with two brothers on here, and afterwards they got on the phone and they smoothed it out. Now they thick as thieves, right?
Well,
so that's
Marvell, how many exchanges we done had? How many exchanges we had when we first started?
I didn't want to mention it because it outnumbers the ones that the other folks have. But now, see, you know, right? Remember, see, here's something that's missing. In the growth process. When we were young, y'all, you might get in a fight with somebody, right? And if you fought valiantly, win or lose, when y'all got through, y'all might be the best of friends. Because it's really a test to see your character. It's really a test to see your conviction. It's really a test to see if you're a young man growing into be a man. Because if I could beat you up all the time, you, I'm questioning you, you arriving at manhood. Because, you know, right now you in sissyhood. Can bully you. You kind of like floating in sissyhood right now. I don't know if you're going to make it to manhood from sissyhood. But when you demonstrate that you have that quality to defend yourself and you'll represent and fight for yourself, then that's when you make friends. But nowadays you lose a fight, oh, I got to go get a gun now, come back and deaden you for beating me, because I can't stand the ridicule that I'm going to hear from my peers because I lost the fight. So it's a lot of cowardly behavior being demonstrated now.
Now, I agree with that to an extent. The bullying is a different thing. When you got a guy that weighs, let's say, well, I'm going to put it in kids' terms, weighs maybe 100 pounds, and he's picking on somebody that weighs 40 pounds. That's not right. That's not right. Now, when you pick on somebody your own size, which is the way it's supposed to be, fair fight. But if it's unequal in any area, something bad's going to come out of it. Because I was this type of guy. I was a little guy all my life. And I had to find me an equalizer. So I had a pipe somewhere, a bat somewhere. And I did whatever it took for me to survive. But like I say, the whole thing is, though, we got to survive together. We got to come together in love. If we come together in love, ain't no need to fight because we're grown men. We learn how to talk. See, men want to fight now because their vocabulary is so short that they're short fused. Oh, I can't. I'm going to have to hit him because, oh, he making me feel bad. See, that's everything start from a feeling. Oh, everybody else gonna think I'm dumb. So I got to prove that I'm strong. But your mind is weak. That strongness to get you unalived. See, and that's what it is. People think that they're superior over someone else. And we're all created equal. It's just that some have different gifts. Some gifts are shown on their big muscular frame. Some gifts are hidden inside that brain, like mine. Mine is my head. I can talk my way out of anything and talk my way into anything. We just got to come together in love and put these powers that we got together, boy. Man, if we hook up, join arms, and that feel that power that'll flow through all of us, man, just like we was in the men's healing circle. It was power in that room the other night. Wednesday night, it was power in that room. I felt it. And that's why I had to direct that power to who needed the power. He was a bad guy on the streets, I guess, in his heyday, before he did all this stuff to his body. But now what I seen was a little weak man, a weak little kid, crying out for help and didn't know how to get it. Hopefully he'll wake up and take some of the advice that we offered him so we could see the benefits of it. I'm going to digress. You know what I'm talking about, Marvell.
Okay, yeah. So you know what? A lot of people, listening audience, may not be aware. And then we have some people who are continual contributors that have not yet been to our healing circle. And I want to profile and outline a little more detail about what that circle does and how it operates. When we come into that circle and we all, you know, like a lot of folks are familiar with it, is that you're glad to see somebody, you got a greeting for them and all of that. But when we get in our format, someone could put out their experiencing. They have the trust to put out something that they're experiencing that they would like some input on. And 9 times out of 10, and I'm, because 10 is perfect. So I'm not going to state perfection, but 9 times out of 10, the person that brought it to the floor walks away feeling better about their circumstance. 9 times out of 10. nine times out of ten, if somebody comes in there and they have a financial woe that they're struggling with, by the end of that session, we have churched up money to help that person meet their challenge. Nine times out of ten, we got a brother that comes in there and he makes chicken enough for everybody every time we come in there. Nine times out of ten. When we get together, brothers have to feel the willingness to be vulnerable to each other and share intimate stuff that's therapeutic for them to share. And when I learned about this when I went through the fellowship. When you hear somebody say sharing, that means that if I have 100% of the burden of guilt or pain or struggle, when I divulge it to somebody, I share with somebody, it cuts down that percentage. It's no longer 100. And if I share with a bunch of people that I trust and feel comfortable with, if it's five of them or four of them, I might end up with 20%, and all four of them have 20%. Everybody can handle 20%. So that's what's happening when we get together in this format. So I just want to let everybody know, you hear about it a lot, and we tout it a lot, but you don't know the spiritual content until you experience it yourself, the spiritual content found in brothers getting together. We had a guy come in there the other day, and he said, I've been working around inmates, and I've been helping inmates. That's what he does. He gets help. Inmates get jobs. He helps inmates fill out applications and make resumes. He wants to see the inmate win, and he's been doing that. He said, but I have never been around a bunch of brothers like this. And it was warming to him. I have never been, he said, I've been looking for an opportunity to be around folks who share and care and express themselves freely and allow themselves to be vulnerable and allow the therapy of one brother helping another to happen. He said that's the first time he's had that. And a lot of people had that same experience of just being around a bunch of black men who are moving and thinking forward and have vision about what's going to happen for our community, what's going to happen for our people if we only hold on and start working together. So I just want to let folk know that don't know, they've heard about it, but they don't know about it. That's what our healing circle is about.
I say, because I encourage all men to come. That's why I'm constantly trying to reach out to brothers and get them in there, especially those that are like-minded and want to see change and understand that we can't do it alone. We have to do it together, because we don't try to pour our insights or everything and cause everybody to see things our way. We get in there and we try to see how we can help each other in every way we can. Because that's what it is, working together, not working for self. I digress.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. So that's the launching pad that launched this movement. It has launched a lot of movements that are current in our communal atmosphere. I try not to say community because Tim corrects me and said we have neighborhoods. We don't have communities because communities have a financial component. And our dollars stay in our area 15, 20 minutes. Towards gulped up by the dollar store, the liquor store, the Chinese restaurant, Mexican restaurant, Greek restaurant, Taiwan restaurant. Only restaurant we got is Stagecoach. that's flourishing. Stagecoach. And if anybody know another one, tell me about it so I can patronize. But the only one I know about that's doing well is the Stagecoach restaurant. Everybody else is sort of floundering. So that's why our dollars get funneled out toward other people's ventures. Because we don't have stuff that circulates. The Florin Square is the only place in Sacramento that I know of where there's a potential. I'm not saying it's meeting it, but it has the potential of being a hub for the flow of our dollars in our community. I said community again, but maybe I'm just aspiring to it being a community like I do aspire to us being a podcast, being visual. We're going to be on the radio, off the radio, or plus the radio, and doing videos and stuff soon. That's our quest, is to be visible and be one of those broadcasts that you can see, right? But our neighborhood money circulation is dismal, you know, so that's one of the things that, again, it's easy to remedy. It's easy to remedy if we just allow ourselves to break down and pay just a little bit more to help our brother's foundation and their businesses. You know, help them, it's going to cost a little bit more, right? But it's the cause is greater than the expense. Spend just a little bit more to help us get established in our community to take over some of these businesses that are engulfing our money and distributing it elsewhere, and we get nothing in return. And I'll yield to that.
I mean, here I'm a black.
Go on, Rhea.
Being the fact I am a black business owner, limousine service, I will put it on the honest percentage scale that only maybe 5% of my black community calls for a ride, jumps in a ride, and I'm starting at $10. It takes them typically to be in a group. It'll be a bunch of white people, a couple of messing up there, and one brother sitting back there for a free ride. But he'll have $2, $3, $4, $5, $1,000 worth of clothes and grills and jewelry on. Now, I'm doing this for the community. I'm doing it for that block. I'm doing it for everybody. And I don't have the structure and support from my own people either. So I know what you're saying when you're looking at the other communities. And, yeah, we shop at Taiwan food, but we know how to make this food. It doesn't have to be signature to be a soul food. We just need to make some food. So everything that's out there, we can flip it over and start doing the same thing, for instance, that the Mexicans are doing. We need to be on the corner more selling food until we get to a store. That's exactly what they do. They map out a territory, they post up their grill, and they focus in on a building. So as soon as they're done with that, maybe the food truck. But then they get to that building. That's why North is taking over up here. Franklin Boulevard is taking over by them up here. They're working on Marysville right now. All these things I've been speaking and preaching and telling people, well, look, we need to come out here. We need to do this. Ain't nobody listening to Rev, and amen to that. Because I know where I have to go. And if I have to do it alone, I've been doing it for 13 years.
Well, I never joined in or nothing.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
You can't say that ain't nobody listening to you, Rev. Somebody listens to you. They may not show it, but you're being heard, so you have to remain positive. Could our negativity just remain positive? That way you can go forward. Because when we think negative, we're stuck. We stop right there.
See? Well, I'm just putting the fact that I got a black business that I have a black business that shut down, so I don't know how to bring that to positive when I brought it to the group, I brought it to a gentleman in particular, and I'm going to somebody else outside of the group, which is a black man. He's going to actually help get the limo up. I'm going to network with him to do it his business because he does corner-to-corner barbecues and grills and stuff. So that's why I was presenting that. I'll jump into a business with you if your business is low. If I can swing a hammer, if I can do a lawn, if I can do anything, that's how Rev is. That's why I brought it up, because people don't come to make sure that I'm moving, that I'm doing whatever. In the black community, they know me when they finally pull me over. Oh, you the one that drive the limo? Yes. Yes, I am. Been doing it for 13 years, six different limos in 13 years. And it's still the same percentage. Maybe 5 to 10% of black people want to pay for that. And I don't know why.
Okay, so you watched the grab. You watched. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I don't watch sports.
Okay, well, I described what happened in the Super Bowl. The San Francisco team had its way the first half, right? Was moving the ball, running the ball, moving up and down. A couple of penalties cost them, you know, the ability to take a good lead. But in the second half, none of that stuff worked. You know why? Because the coach made adjustments that disallowed them to be able to do that. So reason why I'm describing that is that for 13 years you've been doing what you do commendably with little resources. However, if in the next 13, if you want your advancement, I suggest you reconsider your method of approach and appeal. Because it's really on you. It's really on you, brother. It's really on you to stand back and see what is it that I'm doing or not doing that can enhance what I'm attempting to do. And if you do that, I think you'll find there's a couple of things that if you address and redress them, you will get the type of support that you're seeking, because you'll set the laws of attraction in motion. And not like what Mark was saying, like sometimes you set the laws of detraction in motion by things that you say, tools that you seem to have about, it seems like you're cynical about people doing something, so therefore you already made a decision everybody going to do something, so, you know, why would anybody do something? You already decided that they won't. So you're a talented brother. See, you're an anointed, talented brother. I told you that, and I told you I will help you, especially in your music art. I will help you. And so I suggest you do one thing. Go toward the love. Go toward the love and be humble about it. Because you got what it takes. And for 13 years, you've been floundering, and it's time to get on point and get directed and get yourself lined up with people that'll work with you, and not despite some of the shortcomings that you might have. I gave you some information. I'm wondering if you checked into it. And if you did, I'm hoping that you will.
You gave me which information?
Yeah, I gave you a linkage to a telephone number for someone that I think that might be able to assist in some of the areas that you described before. I don't want to get all in detail, but you made a statement that compelled me to say, okay, you got humble and honest about that, so I'm going to see what's in the network to address what you said that you were experiencing, right? And so that's what I'm saying, man. It's like there's no shortage of ability. Maybe it's the method that's being employed that might need to do well to have some redress. That's all.
Well, not only that, you also have to look at God's timing. Sometimes we want something to happen right now, but the timing's not right.
Exactly.
Get them cars together, get them ready, up and running, and get them ready. It'll come. Got to push you out there, but he wants everything to be set.
If I had the money to get him up and get him ready, I wouldn't even have this conversation right now. I've been through six limousines in 12 years, and I mean, beat up, vandalized, destroyed, totaled, shot in a walk-by shooting. This one I got shot in a drive-by shooting. So none of this stuff is towards me.
Take all of them and make one good one.
All the rest of them are gone. See, and two of them I have left. I have one parked in Oak Park on a building that I want to bring to the community so we can try to see if we can get this building so we can all really work together, have a place to have as our own little hub to come together, meetings or whatever case may be, do business out of it, of course. It's right near the corner of Broadway and Martin Luther King.
Well,
the old Red Fox liquor store. Yeah, I got one of my limos parked over there now with a banner on it. For my God's Children Lives Matter, I screwed one to their building for Homeless for Heaven. I've been speaking to the owners. They're not against what I'm wanting to actually do there. And I told them I'll bring it to my people, see if we can all come in as a collaborative to actually get that. Because we can speak to people that will just write it in the whole city plan to give us a building. So it's like it's a lot of things I'm working around on my own. But at the same token, I feel I'm on the team. I might just be sitting on a bench. I don't care. I'm in the team, though. So I ain't always doing
That's what I was saying. You know, it's hard to get somebody to see your vision or your dream. But you just keep doing what little bit you can. Don't try to do a whole bunch at one time. Just gradually do it. God's going to push, God's going to give the increase. Because what you're doing is you're planting a seed. Somebody else going to come along and water it. And God will give the increase.
Amen.
And here's a redress suggestion. I suggest that you write proposals. Get it in hard copy visibility or literature. Write it up. What your plan is, and you know, write it as an appeal to whomever to assist you, have it so that it's not a word of mouth, a verbalization of what you want to do, but something that they can refer back to and you can follow up with them on so that they can stay on point with your vision and they can make a decision based upon what they're seeing and reading. So I suggest you draw up a proposal for what it is that you want to get done, and submit that to a body, our body. Submit it to the bodies that you interact with, and that might make it a little easier for people to conceptualize. How that sound?
I concur on it. Like I say, I'm just doing as I see the flow of people doing. You bring it to the plate, you talk about it, and see what happens. I have yet to have any real paper pass around to me except for an event being thrown like Dr. Flo Lou's thing and, you know what I mean, helping run her for mayor, but there's no curriculum to enhance on anything anybody's in the group doing. So I would know where I can play my little bit of percentage in it also. So then I'll speak out, well, I got a limousine. If we can get it out there, we can put Flo Lou's face on it. I got the new governor to be. Mr. Manny Smith, which Double R and heard on the radio introduced me to, and we talk on a pretty much normal basis. You know, good, bad, funny, ugly, whatever. We just talk like grown funny men. And he wants to do some music with Rev. He's wanting to do some shows and events out where he's at. So I'm doing, once again, on my side, and if I throw it in a group and I don't get no response, I'm gone. I don't like repeating stuff like everybody else gets to repeat stuff. I'm just going to continue on my mission.
See, that's what I'm saying, Rev. But listen, I hope you're not missing what I'm saying. When you throw it in a group, that's one thing. But when you submit it to the group, that's a totally different thing. You can throw it out, and if it don't get no traction, then, you know, you might have air in your jaws because you think that somebody's supposed to just grab a hold to it because it's in the air. Get it out the air and put it on paper.
No, that's what I'm gonna try and do. But as I've explained, this
Hold on.
I'm not a typist, okay? I can't even play with a computer. I need to get an old school typewriter. But then if I wrote it out, I can copy it. I got good penmanship. Praying everybody can read it. So I got ways,
that's
and
it.
I agree with what you said. I said I concur on what you said about that. You know, because
okay.
That is me. I got confirmation from 97.5. One of them Fridays ago. Because I called in because the guy said, you know, I tend to get into writing all my poetry and my stuff like that, and I got to really push myself on that. I keep telling myself that over my head because I got so much paperwork, it's ridiculous. I got novels. I got four novels that's fully written. I got patentable inventions. I got all these things. So for me to write more, for me to just misplace it, you see what I mean? So I got all my most of my mission statements and my business plan in folders. Some of them folders I misplaced. I'm just like this. This is who Rev is. So
right,
I'm not
well.
Always crying out. I'm just trying to get.
Good morning.
Well, good all morning. Right,
good morning.
How's your day?
Good morning, King. I'm good. I'm well. Me and Red
is that
are
Michelle?
Here, but I want to. Huh?
Michelle, that's you. Is that you?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, you gotta let everybody know.
Okay. Well, good morning, everyone. I wanted to chime in because I'm gonna Rev. You know, I'm your girl.
Yes, ma'am.
But what I would like.
Good morning, King.
Okay, hold on, son.
That's right.
Okay. What I would like for you to do, and I'm just asking, in Sacramento, do they have a place where you can get a full diagnostic to find.
What is it? It broke up right then. Hello?
She's having some problems. Just hold on. She might come back.
I thought it was my phone. I'm like, hello?
So
I was trying to get my area of my phone so I can put a note in it at least.
Well, you got her number, don't you?
Yeah, I got her number.
Yeah, we'll contact her because we're getting ready to go off the air.
Oh, it's 10 to 10. Okay, you know that late. Yeah, I'll call her.
Yeah, we only got a couple of minutes now, yeah. Yeah, so Rev, you know, I'll work with you. Just sit down and just try to format one at a time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mainly
I
all one.
I'll work with you. Oh, we don't need just not, you know, we don't need a lot of oratory. We just need to make an appointment to sit down and draw something up, man, so it's clear, right? One project at a time. Right on?
Right on. To the right on, to the right on.
I'll help you, man. Yeah, I wrote right. Hey, Mark. So we were talking, and he said something, and I wrote, and I sent, I wrote RIGHTOWN, right? Right on. Oh. And he wrote me back, talking about, you mean right on. you mean right on. No, I don't talk like that. I said right on. All right, y'all. Listen, folks. Hey. Trust and believe that whatever we have challenges that we might appear to have, we're going to work them out because that's what we're designed to do is work through our challenges and continue to work together. That's what we're going to do. We're going to keep on seeking solutions, and we're going to keep on encouraging and inspiring each other to bring out the best in each other. That's what we do. So thank you very much for your audience and your participation, and we'll see you again Monday. Have a good day.
God bless you, sir, and all.
Yes.
Hello?
Y'all still on the line. It's time to go. It is the Wise Words of One Gone Show. I'm still in training, looking to get a certificate this day on the 16th of the month. Yeah, I didn't need that. I'll talk to y'all most of them later. God bless y'all. See y'all Monday. Peace.